Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your yarn in circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber callers on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. And we have a text line as well. If you want to text us a number, text us a yarn, you can do that. If you're on the shy side, that text number is 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. And check out all our photos, all our yarns, all our podcasts on the Facebook page as well. And become a friend to all First Nation radio stations across the country. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners, welcome back to National Talk Black and have your say. All right, now Australians, casual workers scored a pay rise worth up to $7,700 on JobKeeper scheme, extended until March. So JobKeeper will be extended for Australians until March with a new turnover test and a part-time rate for casuals. So the new two-tiered payments follow revelations in a report to be released today that a million casual workers scored a pay rise worth up to $7,700 on JobKeeper. Prime Minister Scott Morrison will announce an extension of the scheme on Tuesday beyond the original September end date and the future of JobSeeker unemployment payment. As revealed by news.com.au, it will be extended at a lower rate when the original $1,500 a fortnight scheme ends in September, but will remain at the rate of $1,200 a fortnight until March, but a new part-time rate will be offered to casual after confirmation, and that around 1 for 4 workers on JobKeeper were securing a pay rise that was worth $550 a fortnight on average, the same amount as the JobKeeper coronavirus supplement. The surprise bonus was delivered to an estimated 875,000 long-term casuals who qualify for the $1,500 a fortnight JobKeeper payment. The COVID-19 pay rise was worth up to $550 a fortnight on average for the 1 for 4 workers overpaid and rose to $7,700 over a full 6 months scheme. So a bit of light at the end of the tunnel regarding the finance situation, we are still in the pandemic of COVID-19 and we need to do our bit to stay safe. The only vaccine we have is the 1.5 metres away from each other. If you don't need to leave home, continually wash your hands, you mob. Do what you need to do, and so we don't have a second wave. Thoughts are going out to the mob then in Victoria and in New South Wales. Queensland is going pretty good here at the moment, but we need to stay focused on regard to the rules in place. But have you say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416 with Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry for your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say, let's have a yarn, you mob. Too deadly.
Make sure I don't walk out through the door. No, I don't want to be a rambler. And don't let me walk across the floor. When you hold on to my heart, never let it go. Take it by the neck and tie it round. It may want to get away, and if that is so, hold on to it tight and even tighter. Hold on to my heart like a gambler. Make sure I don't walk out through the door. No, I don't want to be a rambler. And don't let me walk across. across the floor. Play that guitar, Herman. Heart like a gambler, make sure I don't walk out through the door. No, I don't want to be a rambler, and don't let me walk across the floor, and don't let me walk across the floor.
Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned into National Talk Black.
Call us now 1-800-422-416.
Yeah, that chopping number again is 1-800-422-416. If you want to have your say, give me a call, have a yarn. National Talk Black. We're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. So have your say and yarn up strong. First Nation radio stations across the country. Very good morning to you all. Hope you're well. News we got here is Oxford coronavirus vaccine is safe and triggers strong immune response. Human trials show. And the unexpected experimental vaccine being developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University against the coronavirus produced an immune response in early stage clinical trials, and data showed on Monday preserving hopes it could be used be in use by the end of the year. The vaccine called AZD-1222 has been described by the World Health Organization chief scientist as a leading candidate in a global race to halt the pandemic that has killed more than 600,000 people. So there is light at the end of the tunnel at this point in time, slowly working towards it, and very smart scientists and immunologists and virologists around the world are working big time and trying to find the vaccine for this pandemic. But the only vaccine we have, like I said earlier, is staying away from each other, 1.5 metres, washing your hand constantly, and do what we need to do regarding staying safe. And that means staying at home, or if you're out and about, wearing a mask and all the stuff that needs to be done. So keep doing that, Mob. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Voice for our people, you Mob. Yarn Up Strong. And we'll talk about what's happening with your mob, with your clan. Are you back at work? How are you travelling? And talk about whatever topic you want to talk about. All is here. We're going to catch up very soon with Uncle Daryl Merger, Deadly Brother. Talk about what he's been doing and the work that he's in. And talk about also his white piece of papers he received as a Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology. And talk about what inspired him to get into that field. But have you say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416, National Talk Black, Yarn with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from McCurry. Let's have a yarn, you mob, too deadly.
Live alone. Woman business. Live alone. Troy Cassidale here, you're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yeah, to Daily Troy Cassidale, thank you very much. It is the National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim Trinity, Trev Murray from the Curry, coming live here from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. Us BBM Bumba Brit Media 90.7 FM. We just had the Deadly track there, Animal Song. You heard all the animals in the background? Well, Rompy Band, Too Deadly. And I'm taking it right through to 12 noon Queensland time. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. I'm going to catch up with the Deadly brother now, Elder, here in far north Queensland, Daryl Merger, and Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology. We'll talk about the profession, but got him here to join me in the studio now. And a very good morning, my brother. How are you, Daryl?
Hey, good morning, Trevor. How are you, mate?
I'm very good. Great to see you, my brother. Just pull that microphone a little bit closer there to you, my brother, so we can have a yarn. First of all, before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
My mob, Trev. I'm a Kangandji, Guragulu Kangandji from Yarraba.
Yes.
That's all my family group.
A deadly footprint over there. Big shout out. Good morning, mob, Jerry.
Oh, good morning to all my family up there, whether they're Kungandji, Yidindji, they're all family, mate.
Exactly, brother, yeah. Exactly. So tell us your journey. You're an elder, TO there, where, like you said, Kungandji, over at Yarri, Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology. So before we start there, look, Murray Lee broke his jaw trying to pronounce those two words, archaeology and anthropology. What's the difference?
The difference is... archaeology is mainly dealing with tangible, you know, tangible evidence, like physical items you can see, feel, touch.
Like rock painting?
Things like stone axes and things you can hold in your hand, boomerangs or whatever. We refer to them as tangible evidence, okay? Mm-hmm. And intangible evidence are mainly spiritual connection to country and places. And that's mainly to do with anthropology, you know. Anthropologists will sort of connect people to country.
And storytelling, so to speak.
Storytelling, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, that's
right, right. There's the difference. So archaeology is the physical evidence. Anthropology is what, the verbal, the story, yarn, the spirits?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of land council throughout Queensland will often use anthropologists to connect our people to country, you know, because back in those days, some of those days, we didn't have a hospital as we see it today.
Mm.
A lot of our elders were born down by the big gum tree, down by the riverbank and things like that. So the connection starts there, you know, and it goes back, way back, you know. Mm. And we're not talking, are we talking about LORE law now when we talk about laws of our country?
Mm.
I'm talking about entanglements go way back.
Yes.
And when you hear them elderly people talk, like a lot of people got elders that they've listened to through their time, and they get information off them. They connect you to country.
Yes.
They'll explain to you where your spiritual places are. They'll tell you where men's places are and girls' places are, and the keep out places, you know. So they're the spiritual connection to country, and that's
which falls under anthropology.
Which falls under anthropology, and then a tangible one is the archaeological evidence that we see around us all over as we walk.
Yes.
You know,
well, we as First Nation people, we look at ourselves in the white man terms, professors anyway, being on country through storytelling for our mob. We're professors in our own field.
Exactly.
And you decided to go and get your Bachelor of Archaeology in the Anthropology, get that piece of paper, you know. So what inspired you to do that?
Well, it started a long time ago because back in the day when I was going to school, like I said, I grew up in, I was born in Yarrabah.
Mm.
Dad and Mum took us outside when we was quite young, you know, moved to a little place called Merrowini. You're probably familiar with Merrowini in Babenda.
Mm-hmm.
Dad was a cane cutter. Hardly, there was no sort of harvesters back in those days, just hand-cut cane, you know.
Exactly.
And shoulder load cane, and that's not chopped up cane. I'm talking about shoulder load, pull stick of cane, and you get a hump it on your hair, carry it.
Exactly.
And then and carry it and put them on trucks, and then they sew a great big chain over them to tighten them down, you know. And from the early industry,
and that's what your father did.
That's what Dad did, mm-hmm. and a lot of his brothers and uncles that came out from Yarrabah worked on the cane paddocks mm-hmm. around Babenda, Merrowini area.
Of course, they would have got paid back then.
Payment, you're looking at very limited pay.
Limited, or not of course.
Paid, yeah, you know.
So there's stolen wages there, touch of stolen wages
That's where it all started from, stolen wages done from way back there because
okay, brother.
Mainly the superintendent or whatever mainly kept some of their money, you know.
Exactly.
And they worked long hours, hot sun, early hours till late at night.
Mm.
Because back in the days I used to watch Dad. Our work could be finished at 5 o'clock, but they still got to stay around and burn the cane.
Mm.
And to burn a cane, you have to wait for the white right wind directly, you know, because you don't want to set another cane from on fire or a house on fire. Yeah.
Mm.
So it was hard then, and I used to see Dad come home around about 11 o'clock at night, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was hard. So I grew up in the sugarcane industry, and believe it or not, I went and followed Dad's footsteps. I went into the sugarcane industry too, because since Babenda growing up, there's only two industries, like you can either go to sugarcane or bananas.
Yeah, gotcha, yeah.
And, you know, I only went to grade 10 because there was no 11th and 12th to further your education.
Sure.
So after grade 10, I went straight into sugar mill, which is no longer standard. And you drive past Babenda today, there's no sugar mill there now.
So a good upbringing, childhood life there, living up in Babenda?
Yes, Babenda was a beautiful place.
Mm.
And not only...
Big shout-out to Bob down there?
Yeah, big shout-out to Babenda, Merrowini, all that. People out there, and Babenda, just like any school, you know, you have your little ups and downs and have your little fights and all that, but it was over.
Mm.
You know, once you have a little knuckle up in the school round, it was
black and white.
Yeah, black and white together.
Yeah,
and
it was
sorted out. Racism, you might get a few people calling you this and that, but it was sorted out.
I'll let the heat of the moment. It wasn't at the point blank. Racism towards a black man.
Yeah, and then you look at Babenda today, you know, a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders and South Sea Islanders grew up in Babenda.
Yeah.
And they're all good families, all, you know, they're all intermingled together, black and white.
Yeah.
And that's why I love Babenda, Merrowini and all those places, little country towns, Gordonwell's another one, where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people get together and with the non-Indigenous people. And I think what we do is we just share our culture, you know.
Yes.
I mean, even like yourself and myself, we've got lots of white mates, you know?
Exactly.
You know, I got lots of white mates, and I can call my brothers too, and I teach them about my culture, you know? And the more you teach a non-Indigenous person about the culture, the more understanding they
well,
are.
Well, that's a bridge builder, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a foundation. You build bridges through you know, understanding other people's cultures as well, you know, and respecting that culture.
Exactly, exactly, brother. And so so leaving the sugarcane and banana industry, how did you get into, well, your passion and vision to get your Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology,
well,
Darryl?
Well, during the weekend, Dad used to take us out, you know, Dad was a hunter, you know, he used to go hunting every weekend, or fishing, camping and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
And we'd follow him in the hills and chasing pigs and cassowaries or whatever, you know. And then as we run past and going past the rocks, I used to notice scarred trees way up in the hills, you know.
Yes.
Scarred trees, or I find these little grooves in the rocks, going around the rocks and swimming holes. And I knew they weren't made naturally, you know. I knew they had to be made by a human form, and that human form was from our ancestors, you know, and our people.
That tweaked your interest
and
your
passion. And that tweaked my interest, yeah.
Yes.
And so I see these all these little grooves. Sort of groups are they? What they're made for?
How old were you then, Darryl?
I was quite young. I was probably in my teens, yeah. 14, 13, and understanding, you know, what Dad was trying to tell me about culture, you know. Like,
yep. So Dad, Mum and Dad were passing on culture to you?
Yeah, well,
you
Dad used to pass on
the, yep.
Dad was used to pass the, like, the material culture. He'd say, see those rocks there? And you see the big shell middens there? That's where the Mole people used to sit down camp and crack their oysters and shells and pippy shells. And, see those grooves in the rocks? They're axe grinding grooves. But in old men used to sit down and grind their axes to make them sharp.
Yes.
And it, that sort of thing interests me. Then it sort of triggered off
a love, a passion,
because I knew what they were.
Yes.
Through Dad and that, but I wanted to know how they were formed.
Mm.
And because I had a good, reasonably good grade 10 pass, junior pass, that enabled me to further my education.
Yep.
And not around Babenda or Cairns area, I decided to, I don't know what made me do it, I just decided to move to Brisbane, just spur the moment like that, just a click of a finger, I went.
Is that right?
And I just told Mum and family, look, I'm going to go down to Brisbane to do studies, you know.
Took the plunge.
Yeah, yeah. At first it started off with a, because I've seen a lot about people, you know, pass away from, you know, like, substance, you know, abuse,
yes,
like
exactly.
Alcohol and drugs and
exactly.
That.
Yep.
And I just said to myself, look, I don't want to be like that, you know, even my dad, I did watch my own father do that, you know.
Mm.
And I said, look, I don't want to be like that, you know, I wanted to be somebody in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went down south, so I did 1 year.
So tell us how you went down, did you catch a bus down or?
I caught the plane down because.
Caught the plane down?
Yeah, because
you're right, did you have any contacts down there or did you?
No one at all.
So there you go, walking in the dark tunnel there, brother.
I was a black man, in, you know,
in the big
man,
smokes.
Coming down in the big smokes and down in Brisbane we stayed at various hostels, you know.
Okay,
and,
yep.
And you can't use Murray time down there, you know. When that bus run at 9 o'clock, you go Murray time. No, not, you know, and
exactly.
I had to learn to commute, you know. You,
yeah.
So you're staying at a motel and you got to understand.
So you're enrolled in TAFE or university?
At that time, I was involved in just TAFE.
TAFE, okay.
Yeah, TAFE. But it was just understanding the principle and the effects alcohol have on the body, human body and all that, you know, understanding the effect on and it has on our people, you know, and understand the spirituality and all that kind of thing, you know, to go with it. So after that 1 year, to cut a long story short, I was a few mate of mine asked if I wanted to go to uni to do a research assistant at the Anthropology Museum based in Brisbane. That was St. Lucia University.
Yep.
But
understanding you only had high school certificate grade 10.
Yep, yep.
So you didn't have 11 and 12. So how did you bridge that gap?
Well, I knew a professor, Professor Bruce Rigsby. He was he's a white guy, non-Indigenous fellow, but he was a linguist. And Professor Bruce Rigsby travelled right throughout Cape York, and he's a linguist, and he came in one day and spoke to the group of all us, you know, like having traveled on a people, and he did a little presentation there, and I was very interested in it.
Yes.
And he asked me if, you know, asked all of us if we were interested to go out to the university, you know, the following year.
Yes.
And I put my hand up and I went out.
Okay, were you the only one in the room to put your hand up?
I was the only one in the room, all the rest, because they were pretty well homesick. After 1 year, they all came back home.
All come home.
Yeah. And I wanted to do the same thing too. I wanted to come home because, you know, I said, no, well, I'm down here for a reason.
Yep.
I'm not just going to jump on a bus and go home without nothing. So I decided to go to...
Sustaining Power.
Yeah. So I did 1 year at the Anthropology Museum with a Dr. Peter Lauer.
Yep.
He was a curator of the museum, very educated man, and he taught me everything about, you know, how to become a, how to manage the museum, like as a curator, how to preserve and protect them and what temperature control and all that kind of thing and that. And there were other Aboriginal people within that unit.
Yes.
It was like an Aboriginal resource unit.
Yep.
There was a
And that was still, this is all still in Brisbane?
That was in Brisbane.
So Queensland Uni?
Yeah, University of Queensland, yep.
University of Queensland, okay.
St. Lucia.
Okay.
So I did 1 year there. And then after that, I was interested. Same person, Dr. Professor Briggs Rigsby, asked me if I wanted to sit for a Bachelor of Arts degree in the following year. And I came back home, you know, to Mum, and spent time with my brothers and sisters around Christmas, New Year's. That plane fare was already paid for. I went down straight away next year, following year.
Yep.
And I did a Archaeology and Anthropology 101 the following year. So that started me off.
That started you off. Well, hold that thought. We'll come back and have another yarn. Continue the deadly conversation. A success of a black man in regard to the Bachelor of Anthropology and Archaeology. That's Uncle Daryl Murgo here yarning with me on National Talk Black. Stay tuned, you mob. We'll come back to foot that deadly yarn. 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Too deadly.
Come, ya little brover, come, ya, you run, go tell my lady. I go take a flop out, go tea, I won't be back till Friday. I'll buy your favorite chicken island rooster, one cotton blow passion pop. So if you wait for me, Lord Sand Beach, if not, say see your walk. If I know low boat, I low dinghy, you are cheap on island too. If you look sea white from long way, you savvy me ply, you're cruising through. Whoa, yo, 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 come ya, little bro, bro, come ya, you run, go tell my lady. I go take a flip boat, go tea, I won't be back till Friday. I'll buy your favorite chicken island rooster, one cotton blow passion pop. So if you wait for me, Lord Sand Beach, if not, say see you more. If I know low boat, I low dinghy, you watch cheap on island too. If you look sea white from long way, you savvy me fly, you're cruising through. Whoa, yo, 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 come ya, little bro, bro, come ya, you run, go tell my lady. I go take off the boat, go TI, I won't be back till Friday. I'll buy your favorite chicken island rooster, one cotton blow passion pop. So if you wait for me, Lord Sand Beach, if not, say see you walk. Come ya, little bro, bro, come ya, you run, go tell my lady.
Tell my lady.
I go take a flip boat, go TI, I won't be back till Friday.
Till Friday.
I'll buy your favorite chicken island rooster, one cotton blow passion pop. If not, say see you walk. So if you wait for me, Lord Sand Beach, if not, say see you.
gas. No petrol. Where's the petrol? Ah, we're stuck now.
Yeah, we're the petrol. We're stuck now. Two deadly black immies, says here Wharf, here on your deadly program, National Talk Black. Having a deadly yarn here with Uncle Daryl Murger, Gordonville based. All his mob there were Yoruba, and his Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology, and that's our conversation today. Yeah, bringing you back into the conversation, Daryl. Thank you very much. And so you at University of Queensland, you got your Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology. So with that information, what did you do with it, my brother?
Well, during my studies with archaeology, there was a job that was coming up in the was advertised in the Department of Community Services archaeology branch based in Brisbane, and what they were looking for, they were looking for an Aboriginal ranger, and this was my third year going into uni.
Yep.
And not realising it, not sticking anything, I decided to put an application in, drop an application in. To applying for the position,
mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I found out that I was successful, and I became a ranger within the archaeology branch.
So, what year was that, Daryl?
Oh, mate, now you're taking me back.
Tweaking your memory.
85, around 80, when we formed the first ranger service, and I joined the a team of Aboriginal men and women throughout Queensland. We became the first Aboriginal Ranger Service throughout Queensland as part of the Department of Community Services.
Okay. I've got a nice photo here, and your mob can check it out on the Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. Pictures here looking at some deadly young brothers and sisters here. Looking at the photo, name some of those people there with you in the photograph.
Okay. We have a couple of locals here too.
Oh, do we really?
Yes, you're probably familiar with some of these names. You know, our brother Bernie Singleton.
Big shout out, Bernie Singleton, yep. So he was one of the first rangers.
Bernie was with us. Bernie was with in the team, the first lot of rangers.
In Queensland, Aboriginal rangers in Queensland.
Yes.
Yeah.
David Simpson was another fellow. And there was a Fred Conway. Fred Conway's an elderly Aboriginal gentleman, very well respected. He came from... Rockhampton.
Rockhampton, okay. And big
he,
shout out.
Yeah, and he's a ranger. He was even just recently, he was a ranger based out of Carnarvon Gorge.
Okay.
Fred, I believe, is still going. And then was myself.
Mm.
I joined the team. Our senior ranger was a bloke called Eric Smith. He was based up in Mount Isa.
Okay, yep.
And then there was... Murray. Yeah, and there's another poor brother. This brother now, he passed away. His name was Ian Owens. He was based up in... And he come from Normanton, but he was another ranger based in Townsville. And then we got another elderly gentleman too, who taught me a lot, along with Bernie and this fellow gentleman name is Bruce Butler, very well respected.
Bruce Butler, yep.
Bruce was a ranger, along with Bernie, myself, and David Simpson, and there was this Peter Smith. He was also from Mount Isa. And there was another young gentleman by the name of Jackson Saylor. He was based up in Laura. He's a ranger up in Laura.
Okay.
And there was a Graham Wilson. That poor gentleman passed away in a plane crash coming across from Mornington one.
Oh, and condolences,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah, my heart and blessing goes out to his family. And then there was a young lady called Beatrice Redford.
I said, actually, any sisters there? So, Beatrice who?
Beatrice Redford.
Okay, I know Beatrice Redford.
Beatrice. Yeah, man, I was a lady. Yeah,
Beatrice.
Yeah, Beatrice.
Big
Beatrice,
shout out,
Beatrice,
we call her.
Beatrice was the only and she used to get us
followers
going, you know.
Yeah,
she fired up,
girl.
Yeah, she fired up. We couldn't, you know. She wouldn't take none of those things, you know.
Big shout out, my sister. Beautiful.
But that was the first Aboriginal Ranger Service, you know,
yeah,
throughout
beautiful.
Queensland. And our main job as rangers was to go out and locate, record sites, that they call them sacred sites back then, you know, sacred sites of cultural
significance. So at this point in time, Daryl, you had your Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
I already had it. And
you're putting it into practice now?
I was just putting it in practice because things you learn out of the book, like theory work and all that kind of stuff.
Theory, now putting
now
it in
you're going into
yes.
practice. So,
yes.
Part of our main job, like we all went into Mount Isa, a place called Lawn Hill. Lawn Hill National Park.
Hill.
Yeah, and Gunpowder, a place called Gunpowder.
Yes.
Some of the rangers, all the rangers, we all went out.
So talk about walkabout, brother.
Oh, walkabout. And then when you talk about Aboriginal artifacts, well, when you go to Lawn Hill, Mount Isa, and all those places out there, you actually see the artifacts, flake tools, stone axes, they're lying on the ground.
Yeah.
Untouched.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And it's amazing what you see, and you can be killed. Yeah, well, see, that's the thing with cultural heritage, you know. When we talk about native title, when we look at North Queensland native title, they're just like little dot points on the map where people, our, you know, communities have been successful with their determination, native title.
Mm.
But when I look at it in a way of cultural heritage, it's like a big blanket claim right over the old north.
Nice description. I love that.
Yeah, I love it too, because everywhere we walk over cultural heritage sites.
Yes.
And the thing what I do is, as a ranger and even now as an archaeologist now, I like to teach it. I become a mentor, trainer, and teacher of identification of Aboriginal cultural heritage sites.
So there's probably a message going out there to everybody out there who's tuning in. If you've got an organisation or, you know, you're looking for a brother with the degree or Bachelor of Archaeology Anthropology, you're happy to deliver your service.
Well, that's what we... that's part of our service as rangers. We do a lot of public relations.
Yes.
And networking. And
educating people of the world.
And that's what I like to do. I like to be known as an educator.
Beautiful.
Whether you're educating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people, your own people.
Yep.
But I'd like to also educate the non-Indigenous people.
Exactly.
If I can educate one non-Indigenous people and convince him about our culture, that makes my day.
Beautiful.
And
you've done your job.
Yeah, yep. And if I can educate 200 or 300 in a day,
beautiful.
That put me on top of the world.
Yeah, beautiful, yeah. And when you're talking about something that you love and you're passionate about and you deliver it and people pick up what you're putting down and you know, like I said, the bridge builder, that cuts out racism.
Yeah, and that's
education is the key.
Yeah, and I know everyone out there, all of us, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, all of us bummers and Murrays, you know, we all got white friends.
Yeah, of course we have.
We all got white friends that we can call brothers and white sisters, and see...
And true down-to-earth white friends.
Yeah,
know?
And true down-to-earth white friends. You
that
can take
respect
home...
respect both ways.
Yeah, and they respect your family. So, you know, I've got a lot of white friends, and I just teach them, you know, about my culture.
Sure.
And I certainly like to listen about learn about their culture, whether they're Irishmen, Englishmen, where their background come from. I like to listen to their culture too as well, you know.
And we always say, who are you, mob, where you from?
Yeah, that's
We ask the white fella the same thing.
Yeah.
Tell us your connection, you know.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even know their great-grandfather, sort of thing, you know. So it's good for them to know, you know.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Get some tweet about, because... We know our great-great-great-grandfather, so to speak.
Yes,
and
that's
our
right.
fourth cousin is like a brother to us.
Yes, yes. You know? And the thing is, a lot of these non-Indigenous mates of mine, they understand and respect that.
Yes.
Because you take them out fishing, you take them out camping, you trust them with their own kids, you know, they sleep at their own place.
Yeah.
So they're like a white brother, and that's what they are, you know.
They're welcome to the family.
They're welcome to the family, yeah.
Exactly. So that's fantastic. So you was part of the first inaugural Aboriginal Rangers in Queensland.
That's right. We started off I just mentioned all those
beautiful
other
people.
Rangers. Yep.
Yes. And then from that you did ranger work. You come back home, didn't you?
I came back home. Yeah. After that, I travelled around quite a lot. Actually, I've been on a big journey, going all over the place. I got based in. I was a Brisbane ranger for a while.
Yep.
Bernie and all the other fellows were all based at the places I just mentioned, you know, Cairns, all those places I've named, right up through the Bamaga.
Yes.
And each of us rangers had a job to do, go down country, locate, you know, sacred sites and all that kind of thing, document them.
Mm-hmm.
And like I also mentioned, we did a lot of public relations, networking with stakeholders and property owners, because some of these cave sites and borer grounds and all that kind of thing were actually on private property.
Sure.
So we had to build that good relationship with property owners, stakeholders, and going in and saying, look, we're not there to take the site off you. We just want to come here and, you know, and document
record,
it.
Record, study, what have you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for future
and so
reference.
You as an elder, as a black man, a man with your bachelor degree, archaeology, anthropology, still travelling to another man country, there's still protocol.
Definitely.
And you operate with that protocol.
Oh,
yes.
You definitely got to understand Aboriginal community protocols. You know, when you're going out to another man's country, you don't just jump on a car and go out onto another man's country. You know, it's all sacred country.
Yep.
And like you just mentioned, Trev, there are protocols, you know, and we got to abide by those protocols and respect those protocols. And they can be very cultural protocols. As you know, all other communities, they work
in different
ways.
That's under LORE, isn't it?
That's under LORE, yeah. Yep. And you go break LORE, you could get you know, spirits where you live, you can get whited and you can get all sorts of things.
Yeah, or no good spirits go travel
yeah,
with you.
Yeah, and that's the other thing people don't understand about yes. that other side. There are good spirit and bad spirit on country. And when you go on country, every time I go on country, I always used to go with the traditional owners, you know, and they used to take me out and show me burial sites. Mm. I've been to a burial site out at Idesvale, where this elderly gentleman took me and showed me a tree burial.
And you would make yarn to the spirits, wouldn't you?
Yes. Brother. When you go on country...
Let them know you visit and respecting their country.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. When you go on country, you always talk to the people, make yourself welcome. Like when I go out there, for example, I say, look, my name is Daryl Murga, I'm Kungandjian from Yarraba. I'm coming on your country, I'm here not to take anything, but yes. I just would like your blessings to yes. pass through your
country.
And when I'm with the traditional, they actually, they smoke you. They smoke you with... They've probably got eucalyptus leaves or a couple of leaves they smoke you with.
Mm-hmm.
Or if not, they give you an underarm. They rub their arm and rub down, you know, and say, welcome.
And they've got their different methods.
They got different methods.
Tribal mob, different ways of doing it.
Exactly. Every tribal group that I visit throughout Queensland, all that different method of welcome you to country. But it's got to come from the traditional elders, you know, and you got to respect that. And if you don't abide by that rule, then, like I said, there are consequences. It could come back not to you, but it could come back in your kids.
Yeah,
so it can affect your family.
Exactly.
If you don't,
if you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, and even if you see something on land, on you see a stone axe or something that's in situ. It's in situ. It just simply means. Situ just means if you find a stone axe and it's still stuck in mud or as is, you leave it as is.
You leave as is.
Yeah, you leave as any stone tool you find anything lying around. In our Aboriginal country community, you don't touch it at all.
Sure.
You don't just take a look at it, don't even move it, don't even take a photo of it until, you know, traditional owners ask you to. If you're an archaeologist or researcher, you got permission to do that.
Exactly.
Because every stone sometimes tells a story. It's got spiritual, you know, like powers in them. Some of them have, some stones are. Spiritual, they can actually use it to against you.
Exactly.
To get you sick, you know.
So to our deadly listeners tuned in, Trinity Trevier Murray from the Curry having deadly yarn with Uncle Daryl Murga, Gunganji brother and elder, and he's also got a Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology. He's just talking about his journey. We have the news coming up very soon. Daryl, just want to bring up that conversation regarding what's happening in WA and regarding the damaging of our caves over there with our traditional owners over there. As archaeologist, anthropology man, black man, elder, that must cut you to the bone.
That just breaks my heart, it just breaks my heart and I feel for those traditional people out there, you know. It's just like if a bulldozer went through their gravesite, you know, how would they feel? And speaking of bulldozers going through site, I've seen bulldozers too, the after effects, when a bulldozer have gone through the sacred burial ground. And I know how those people feel because I've seen it before on two occasions. We had to go in after and excavate all the skeletal remains. You know, using body bags, like things like that, to get the skeletal remain out. But I know exactly how they feel.
Yes.
I was involved in a couple of big ones. One of them was at Gundawindi.
Okay.
When the bulldozer went through. And they had all the telltale signs at Gundawindi. When you go into an Aboriginal burial ground, they'll have a scarred tree. Down in New South Wales, they got those scarred trees, or trees are called dendroglyphs. They're deep carving on big wooden, like wooden trees. They're all around the perimeter of the burial site.
Mm.
And see, these people are so ignorant, they're hungry for, they see dollar signs. They just want to go
mining, in. Whatever.
So they just want to put a bulldozer in. You think about the big bucks. But they don't contact the local Aboriginal people and ask them what...
Sacred sites everywhere.
Yeah, so what do those actually scarred trees mean?
Exactly.
It's just like a tombstone, you know. Those tombstones represent a burial site, you know, like their cemetery.
There's stories there.
And if they ask the traditional owners what those trees mean, it's their sign of saying this, respect this place, it's a burial site, and keep out.
Well, that's the Black Man's Encyclopedia.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
And we've got them up.
You want to call it read between the pages.
Yeah, and we've got them up here too.
We've got them up here too
in the rainforest. We've got scarred trees.
Yes.
We've got a stone circle, concentric circle, that means keep out sites and that. And just like Bora ground and Kipper rings, you know, they're all up here.
Yeah.
And that's what I educate people about now, just, you know, when how to identify these things. And
exactly.
When we talk about cultural heritage, we don't, a lot of us think about the, look at the big picture, like caveside and that, but cultural heritage and sacred site can only start at something as small as a stone tool, like a flake.
Yes.
It starts from there, then you look at the bigger picture, it grows there.
Sure. Well, there's no measurement to what a sacred site is. Like you said,
no,
stuff
from right.
a small stone, which is could carry a lot of stories.
It has.
In that
it
one
has.
Stone,
yeah.
In that area, and reason why it's there, what have you, you know?
And see, those power, like I talk about, those stone tools have power in them.
Yes.
You look at, you probably remember a case a long time ago up here, happened up here north, where somebody came up and stole stone from the Bouncing Rock, remember? They stole the stone from Bouncing Rock from up here.
Yep.
And they took it down south. They expected the stone to bounce down there. Apparently they got very sick,
yep,
you know,
exactly.
Very sick, yeah, and they had to return those stones back up here.
Exactly.
So incident like that, you know, we have sacred stones here that's got different...
There's plenty of stories like that around this country.
Oh, man, I can write a book about all the stuff I've seen, you know.
Yeah, beautiful.
Know,
and we'll have more yarns, my brother, and thank you very much for sharing with us, Uncle Darryl. We'll be yarning soon. We're in touch, of course. And thank you very much for coming in. Beautiful stories, and we'll keep our conversation going strong. But all the best to you and your deadly family, my brother. You stay safe and stay strong. And we'll yarn soon, Uncle Darryl.
No worries. You know where I am. Cheers, mate.
No worries. That's right. Too deadly. Beautiful yarn with Uncle Darryl Murga, Bachelor of Archaeology and Anthropology, and one of the head rangers there, Gurganji, over there at Yarraba, Land and Sea Country, the rangers over there. So big shout out to your mob. This Trendy Trev here. Murray going to sign off here. Got the news coming up very soon, but stay tuned to National Talk Black and your First Nation radio station around the country. That deadly number, yarn tomorrow, 1-800-422-416. Or text the brother 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Too deadly, you mob. Stay safe.
There's a breed of man with a calloused hand, for his work is harder than most. And he takes a stand, not on the land, but the deck of a fishing boat. Now his specialty is barramundi, but he'll take a salmon or two. I've even been told that catfish and all go into the packaging too. So run out the nets, haven't got enough yet, gotta catch a barramundi for you. You can bake it or fry it, never know till you try it, you can even cook it up in a stew. Just roll them in flour and fry them on the stove, or chuck them in the fire and cook them on the coals. Serve with rice and a pannock and a tea, some chips and salad, any way will do me. Barramundi. The nets haven't got enough yet, gotta catch a barramundi for you. You can bake it or fry it, never know till you try it, you can even cook it up in a stew. Just roll them in flour and fry them on the stove, or chuck them in the fire and cook them on the coals. Serve with rice and a pannock and a tea, some chips and salad, any way will do me. Barramundi. Now they work with the tide, and tempers are tried by catfish and crab in the net. An occasional shout, how we gonna get it out? There's a bloody big croc in it yet. But a good sharp knife gets them out of strife, they'll cut the reptile free. And the skipper might swear and pull out his hair, it's a rugged old life on the sea. So run out the nets, haven't got enough yet, gotta catch a barramundi for you. You can bake it or fry it, never know till you try it, you can even cook it up in a stew. Just roll them in flour and fry them on the stove, or chuck them in the fire and cook them on the coals. Serve with rice and a pannikin of tea, some chips and salad, any way will do me. Barramundi. 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 So run out the nets, haven't got enough yet, gotta catch a barramundi for you. You can bake it or fry it, never know till you try it, you can even cook it up in a stew.
Just roll them in a flour and fry them on the stove, or chuck them in the fire and cook them on the coals. Serve with rice and a panic and a tea, some chips and salad any way you'll do me.
Barramundi.
Now a barramundi boat is fairly small, 12 metres long at the most, with four in a crew all living on stew, for their rations are nothing to boast. And for weeks on end these unshaven men breaking their backs for a crust, just to be let down when they get into town by an unpaying skipper gone bust. So run out the nets, haven't got enough yet, gotta catch a barramundi for you. You can bake it or fry it, never know till you try it, you can even cook it up in a stew. Just roll them in a flour and fry them on the stove, or chuck them in the fire and cook them on the coals. Serve with rice and a panic and a tea, some chips and salad anyway will do me.